You're listening to the Bible for Normal People, the only God-ordained podcast on the internet. Serious talk about the sacred book. I'm Pete Enns.
And I'm Jared Bias.
Hey, welcome everybody to the first episode of Season 3 of the Bible for Normal People podcast. Season 3, Jared.
Woo-hoo!
It just seems like yesterday.
And so it begins.
Started out.
When we were so wee naive. Pups.
Like, what is a podcast?
Just babies in a manger, really. Just
babies in a manger. Anyway, but here we are. And our episode today is, what does Christian art even mean? And our guest is hip-hop artist Propaganda.
Yeah, we have for this season some hard-hitting Bible scholars, some great practitioners. We've got it all, but today we're going to start with Prop, as we affectionately call him.
His buddies call him Prop.
Prop. Yeah. And he's a hip-hop artist who had an album come out in 2012. He's had other albums, but that one called Excellent really put him on the map, had a lot of some controversy, but a lot of good stuff on that. So we talked to him about his upbringing, his faith, about the Bible and how it shifted, how he read the Bible shifted, and how that wasn't always, that's not always a good thing.
Right. Yeah. For him, he had to like relearn respect for how he was raised after sort of getting into like needing to have all the answers kind of stuff. That's the way I put it. But, and just, it just came out of that just amazingly balanced and wonderful to talk to. He's just so much fun to hear the wisdom that I think he's collected over the years of having to navigate some difficult waters and thinking about what it means to be an artist who is also a Christian. And what does that even mean? You know, what does Christian even mean when you're talking about art? That sort of came out too. And those are just fabulous, fantastic, deep discussions that we had with him.
Yeah. And I think while it's about art, I would hope to draw all of us, our attention to the implications of that. That's the art world and what happens when we use these code words and other things. But I think it applies to so many other areas
right.
of our faith and how we make these distinctions between who's in and who's out on what are, if we break it down, are pretty ludicrous reasons.
Yeah, and that for any part of our humanity that works. But for a lot of us probably listening to this podcast, it has to do with maybe the world of ideas, for example. Like, and you have to have certain code words and you're in or you're out. And that's true about, you know, most of our humanity, I think. We tend to build these walls. And Prop's not about building walls. That's for darn sure. I'll tell you that.
All right. Well, let's get into this conversation.
Let's do that.
Like, you legit talking about rated R movies right now? Like, that's the hill you finna die on right now? Like, oh, do you listen to secular music? And I'm like, what? Like, for real, that's what y'all worried about? Of, like, this crack flooding our streets. What? Like, that's your biggest problem is listening to secular music? Like, it felt like the 50s to me. Oh, man, don't chew gum in school. Like, word? That's the greatest sin right now is chewing gum in school.
Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche, auch bei den Johnsons, oder Anna?
Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau, made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil.
Wahnsinn, wie schnell das Jahr wieder vorbeigezogen ist. Fast wie die Elektrofahrzeuge und Plug-in-Hybride von Opel. Und noch was kommt angebraust. Bis zu 5.000 Euro mit der geplanten gesetzlichen Förderprämie für E-Mobilität 2026. So geht klimafreundlicheres Fahren. Lass dich unverbindlich und persönlich beraten. Alle Infos auf opel.de. Die Höhe und Verfügbarkeit der staatlichen Förderungen hängen von den jeweils gültigen Richtlinien ab. Ob und wie sie die Voraussetzungen erfüllen, wird im Einzelfall geprüft.
All right, well, welcome to this episode of the Bible for Normal People, and welcome, Prop, to you, and thank you for joining us.
What's up? You're all heretics.
Thank you.
Thank you, and goodbye.
That's our show for
the evening.
Thank you. We just wanted some validation here, Prop. Thanks.
That's all we needed.
Excellent. Well, hey, you know, thanks for stopping by. Let's get started with how we often want to get started with these things. Give people a little context. Tell a little about your story and bring us up to speed on where you're at.
Yeah. I was just kidding about the first part, if you didn't figure that out already. Yeah, so my name is Propaganda. Prop for short. I wasn't born that. I was born Jason. I'm from South Central Los Angeles. I grew up in and around the LA basin, all over the place, different San Gabriel Valley. I've lived in just all over the place. I come from sort of like almost like a borderland between the black neighborhoods and the Latino neighborhoods. I lived like right on sort of the overlap of those two communities. Just sort of my space of origin was like almost like bicultural in nature. My father was a Vietnam War vet and Black Panther. And my mother's, you know, from D.C., just East Coast girl, fell in love with a Southern boy who was originally from Texas, who, you know, it's kind of a funny story about how my parents met. Now I'm going way far back, but this is actually a funny story. My father was sharing a bunk with a dude from D.C. who happened to be friends with this pretty young thing that he was writing letters to. And he kind of looked over the shoulder and was like, yo, who's that? Can I write letters to her? And that's how he met my mom. Yeah. And yeah, when he got out, he joined the Black Panther Party. His family had already moved to Watts. And that's why I'm an L.A. boy. Anyway, so that's kind of where it started with me. I fell in love with hip hop, partially just the backdrop of Los Angeles, but mostly because, again, when you're in a Latino neighborhood during this time, during like the war on drugs and kind of the crack attacks, just the birth of whatever, like, you know, sort of gang culture that y'all all know. The world that grew N.W.A. Like, so if you grew in that, but you wasn't in a neighborhood that really allowed you to sort of bang, you just found other stuff that entertained you. And I found, you know, the other things that was happening in Los Angeles, like the Bones Brigade and skateboarding and graffiti and hip hop. So I found all that during that time and just really found a voice for that. And again, if you're from a family that's, you know, pretty militant, you know what I'm saying? Like the type of hip hop I fell in love with, you gotta remember this is like Public Enemy age and Arrested Development and just like peace, love, and unity and having fun and just that sort of like uplift the community type hip hop that, like, of course, my father, when he heard that, it just absolutely resonated. And that's what was allowed into my house. And that's the way I saw the world already. So that's just the route I went.
So how does your faith play into that story?
That's dope, actually. So when my parents became Christians, when I was in elementary school, we just kind of like found a church in a phone book. Like, you could Google what a phone book is, but we just found a church in a phone book, and we just happened to land at this place that was just like super progressive in the sense, super progressive for like the late 80s. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, it was guys from like legendary graffiti groups. It was like legendary, like skateboarders, like went to our church because their parents were Christians, you know? And they would let us, like, I mean, the big kids would, like, I mean, it was painting, like, graffiti murals on our back walls. And we were, I guess I came from a church that just kind of allowed us to bring, like, our full selves and, like, experiences. Like, the guy that led me to Jesus, my eighth grade middle school, like, Sunday school teacher was, like, a known gang member, you know what I'm saying, who just came to faith, you know what I'm saying?
So would you say that community then, so like me growing up in Texas in a more Southern tradition, we would have been like pop culture versus Jesus.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you were in a community that actually embraced culture in certain ways.
Yeah. It was like, what are you going to do? You know what I'm saying? I think their biggest concern was like, don't join a gang, don't get a girl pregnant. That's all they wanted for us, right? So if you liked rap, it was like, oh, that's cool. That's like art, you know? So they were just like, yeah, let's do that, you know? It was just like, so I didn't have, like, it's like you said, from that like Southern perspective that kind of grew a lot of like Christian music, I just didn't have that bifurcation of like, if you're a believer, you can't do this type of music. We of course had to, like, you shouldn't be talking about certain things as a believer, but like, you know, you just, if you love hip hop,
you didn't use Christian as an adjective. It wasn't like Christian music.
No, it was just like, there was no like Christian music was gospel music. Like, you know, we black, like there's choirs, you know what I'm saying? Like that's Christian music, you know, it was worship songs. It wasn't like a Christian contemporary. It wasn't like festivals. We didn't have Christian radio stations. We had gospel stations, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, so there wasn't, if you love hip hop, you went where hip hop was. There wasn't any sort of alternative, like sort of bizarro world, like that just didn't exist. If you liked hip hop, you went where hip hop was. And you had groups like Poor Righteous Teachers or like Tribe Called Quest. These people were just like openly Muslim. They brought their faith to the mic, you know? So you just didn't think twice about it, you know? So you brought who you were to your verses, you know? And if you were good, you were good. And at the end of the day, that's really like, that was the capital that we sort of traversed in. That was our economy, was skills. Like, if you could rap, you could rap, you know what I'm saying? And there was, in a lot of ways, that was your greatest apologetic, even for your world belief, is like, well, I don't know, well, can you rap? Like, if you was not a good rapper, nobody wanted to hear about your Jesus, you know what I'm saying? So I just kind of came out of that. I was kind of like blindsided when somebody asked me how long I was doing like Christian rap or gospel. I was like, I don't know what the hell that is.
What does that mean?
Yeah, what does that mean? You know what I'm saying?
So you never had to baptize sort of your art with like Christianese.
It wasn't until I tried to sell an album. It wasn't until I hit the road, right? And started getting booked at things that I realized that, yeah, you got to have these like signals, these triggers, and it's just these coded speech. Yeah,
let's go into that. Yeah, the coded speech. So you have this interesting perspective of not having that before and then entering it later, where a lot of us kind of grew up in it. So we wouldn't have known any different. So
yeah.
What was that experience like? Like, what were those things that you kind of, those code words that you started feeling?
I mean, you've heard the jokes, like the JPMs, like the Jesus per minutes, you know what I'm saying? Like, when you're doing songs.
I've never heard that before.
I don't know if you ever heard that, but yeah.
It's no, like, I did not.
Yeah, your Jesus per minute, like, quotas. And like, I didn't have any sort of, like, I knew what I believed. You know, my grandmother's like brothers, Greater Union Missionary Baptist Church, Compton, California. You know what I'm saying? So like, I knew what I was talking about, but I didn't have the theological chops to give you an apologetic for it. You know what I'm saying? So I was just more sort of taken back, where I was like, I didn't understand. And it was just it was almost like, from an anthropological perspective, I was just like, this is so curious to me. And there was part of me that felt like, since I ain't come from like a Bible Belt culture, that I was just like, yo, this is really rad that like y'all could just be just openly Christian. You talk about Jesus at school? Like, that's crazy. You know what I'm saying? Like, dang, that's a cross right there on that. Look at this commercial. It's a y'all talk about Jesus on TV? Like, it was such a like, I didn't know to take that for granted, nor did I know to think that that was sort of this stale kind of like not authentic experience. Since I didn't come from that, I was like, yo, this is, man, y'all got it good out here. You know what I'm saying? But then the opposite of being like, well, realizing like, yo, that's all you know, and that's not who y'all really are, was like, really, like, I was just more anthropological. I was just like, man, how did y'all, what is this? Like, how did you?
Well, can you explain that? Because that's really interesting. You said it a couple times. That's not who you really are. Like, you mean inauthentic?
This way it came off. Because and to me, in the sense that like, you there long enough and it's like, oh, y'all just go to church because you go to church. This is what you do. And I'm like, in California, if you go to church, fam, like, this is a conscious decision. You know, that it's not a normal thing in my experience. Like, you've made a countercultural decision to step into this space. You know what I'm saying? Whereas it was interesting to be like, that's not countercultural for y'all. That's normal.
Yeah, it's a cultural reality.
A cultural reality that everybody goes to church. You know what I'm saying? So to me, it was like, oh, you didn't have to fight for this. That's just what y'all do. So to me, it just sounded like, my first impression was like, oh, you don't mean this. This is just what you guys do. You know, and I don't know. Obviously, it was a first impression type thing. So it's like, there's way more nuances than that. But my first impression was, oh, that's just what y'all do. You ain't really in this, especially when what signaled, once you get into the roots of like, what signaled Christian to you? You know what I'm saying? And then and in my mind, like, which I was wrestling with, like, you already, like, you legit talking about rated R movies right now? Like, that's the hill you finna die on right now? Like, secular music? Like, oh, do you listen to secular music? And I'm like, what? Like, for real, that's what y'all worried about? Mm-hmm. Of like, this crack flooding our streets. What? Like, that's your biggest problem is listening to secular music? Like, it felt like the 50s to me. Oh man, don't chew gum in school. Like, word, that's the greatest sin right now, is chewing gum in school. You know?
Well, I think, you know, whenever you identify, like, when you identify, which we, a lot of us do, we kind of identify what we're against helps us define who we are. And, but when we're all the same, when you're in this homogeneous group, yeah. we can get real nitpicky.
Yeah.
You know, like whenever there's enough Christians to kind of be fat and happy, then yeah. we get real nitpicky about it. It's like we have to find stuff. Yeah, we have to sort of find something that we're against yeah. so that we can sort of show that we are the true Christians, and then it just gets absurd at some point.
And of course, there was like these like experiences. Like I said, since I grew up in this like Latino neighborhood, there were these like outreaches that some of the churches out here were doing that were like just really like street born, sort of like cholo kind of Mexican American experience like churches, and they would put on these plays, you know, these like full on theatrical with like real sounding guns and just like remaking this sort of like Mexican gang experience that was like almost like y'all's a little too real, you know what I mean? And since I didn't really gangbang, like, and not only did I not gangbang, I wasn't a Mexican gang member, you know what I'm saying? So like that was like our version of like outreach, like we're gonna do these plays with these like lowriders and these cholos and this gang stuff, and somebody got shot, and now it's like, what's going to happen? Are you going to go to hell? Like, you know what I'm saying? And then they do their gospel pitch, you know? And that, again, to me was so peculiar because, again, like, I didn't gangbang. Like, that's stupid. Why would I? I would never make the decision that this character in this play made, you know? So it was just, I don't know. It was like I said, I just existed in this borderland where it was just, you're just naturally bicultural. So I think that's why I kept saying it was anthropological to me, because I feel like I grew up in a world that I had to kind of be like that when my neighbors were either undocumented or didn't speak English. So you just live in this space where you're just like, man, that's not my experience, but I'm here and it's kind of interesting. It's becoming, I'm enveloping it, and I know it's making me see the world better because I'm getting a perspective that's not my own, but it's still peculiar, you know? So I felt like traveling into sort of Christianese world, it almost resonated the same way that like growing up in a Latino neighborhood resonated, to where it was just like, this, I'm with y'all, but I'm not y'all. Like, this is different, you know?
Right. So how did growing up in these, you having different feet in these different worlds,
mm-hmm.
how did the Bible play into that? How did it affect how you saw it, what it was used for?
Well, yeah, I think that our pastor at this church was really an academic. I think at the end of the day, he was an academic. So the sermons and such were just so kind of in the rafters. So I think that early on, I had more of an astute like biblical literacy than I thought I did. And then I would go to my uncle's church, you know, which was you know, and like I think these things made me kind of almost primed me to understand that there are so many variant ways that people experience the faith and they experience the Bible, because I'm hearing the Bible preached in so many different tones, in so many different languages, so many different voices, that, and there was no way in the world, although at some point I did do this, but this was again later on, where I can't discredit the experience of my Uncle Chorus Jean or my Uncle Billy Ray, you know what I'm saying, who was my Mama Winnie's pastor, who, you know, ain't had but a third grade education, you know what I'm saying, but like, she's the holiest person I knew, you know what I'm saying, so I can't discredit that, but I also can't discredit, you know, my own pastor, who's like the dean of ethics at the local seminary. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't discredit that either. Also can't discredit this, like, you know, bilingual Spanish speaker dude who's just worried about these little boys joining 18th Street. That's a Mexican-American street gang from Los Angeles.
So you had all these expressions that actually for you...
I have all these expressions already. Yeah. So it was like, who am I to tell any of these people if we are? It's just like we're all looking at the same book, and I felt like we was all kind of desiring the same end, which was make much of Jesus. You know what I'm saying? That, like I said, I mean, I didn't know the vocabulary to tell you that. Well, this is what I was learning. You were learning about the different denominations. You learned about cultural expressions. I didn't know that. You know what I'm saying? But that's what I was experiencing. It wasn't until you start getting in, for me, when you start getting exposed to like Reform theology and seminary and Calvinism, that sort of give you language that basically says all them suckers is wrong. You're so upset. That's sort of the language they give you for that. You know what I mean? Like, nobody in your past understood the scriptures. You know what I'm saying? Like, your grandmama don't know what she's talking about. You feel me?
Your
Jeder meckert über den ÖPNV. Aber was steckt wirklich dahinter? Mit dem Podcast Ticket to Anywhere blickst du hinter die Kulissen des Nahverkehrs. Schauspieler Maximilian Mundt reist zu seiner Oma, trifft spannende Menschen wie Malte Zierden oder Linda Zervakis und erklärt alles zu Bus und Bahn. Und wie sie besser werden können. Erlebe ein außergewöhnliches Audioerlebnis rund um unsere alltägliche Mobilität. Jetzt reinhören auf Spotify oder unter zukunftnahverkehr.de/podcast.
Dein altes Sofa zerfällt langsam und die Black Friday-Angebote sind wirklich unschlagbar. Aber dein Gehalt kommt erst Anfang des Monats. Kein Problem, mit der PayPal-Bezahlung nach 30 Tagen. So hast du jetzt mehr Spielraum beim Bezahlen und der Betrag wird nach 30 Tagen automatisch und kostenlos von deinem Konto oder deiner Karte abgebucht. Alle Infos auf paypal.de/30 Tage. PayPal es. Vorbehaltlich Kreditwürdigkeitsprüfung verfügbar mit deutschem PayPal-Konto für Einkäufe zwischen 1 und 2.000 Euro.
I guess your spiritual nurturing time.
Yes.
You know, from, I guess you said you were junior high school or something. When, yeah. You didn't experience a lot of hang-ups that a lot of our listeners probably have, because they were, a lot of them were raised, yeah, you experienced Jesus a lot, but it's, you've got to think the right things. It's not just about like, keep away from this gang. It's more like, this is what you have to believe about Adam. Even if your pastors, for example, believed a certain thing about Adam that might not have been harped from the pulpit every Sunday, like, if you don't hold on to these particular ideas, these particular ways of thinking about the Bible, then you're really sub-Christian. I'm guessing you didn't...
No, it was the opposite, yeah.
Good for you. You didn't have that in your back?
No, okay. but I enveloped it. There was a moment later on, you know what I'm saying, when you discover that stuff for me, I discovered it in my 20s of like, oh, that is called theology. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And again, if you didn't come from a place that made that a big deal, it felt at the time felt like a gulp from a fresh spring. I was like, oh, there's terms for this. Oh, you know, oh, well, tell me more. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm in college. I'm studying like intercultural studies and sociology. And you know what I'm saying? And I'm looking at these like ancient cultures and civilizations. I was an illustration major, illustration intercultural studies. And it was just like, yo, like, I had never thought of my faith academically. It turns out, like I said, my pastor was an academic, but I didn't know that. You know what I'm saying?
And now you're curious.
Yeah, now I'm curious. Like, now I'm like, tell me more.
It's not a way of building borders between you and other Christians necessarily,
no.
Right?
So okay. It was like so it was almost like I was, like I said, I was told later, hey, everything you learned before this moment is false, you know? And it was like, so there was moments where I was like, yo, was I even saved then? Like, was my pastor saved? Was my grandmother saved? Like, you know, and you start, so there was an unraveling of some bad practices, but also some very good practices that I thought me being a faithful believer meant that rather than to amalgamate that stuff, I was supposed to abandon it, you know? So yeah, so it was like, so what your listeners experienced, I experienced till later. I came in, actually I realize now, with a much healthier understanding of the faith than I gained when my sort of apologetic chops got better.
Hey everyone, my name is Robert Oss from Portland, Oregon, and I am part of the producers group here at the Bible for Normal People. One thing I've appreciated about this podcast is all the great guests and interesting topics that are covered. If you've gotten something from this free podcast, I want to tell you a way that you can help support Pete and Jared and their work. This podcast is brought to you by supporters on the Patreon platform. And did you know, for as little as $1 a month, you can be part of a group to help support Pete and Jared in sending this free podcast out to more people just like yourselves. If you can't support financially, feel free to go to iTunes and review and rate the podcast. That goes a long way to help others find us. One group in particular I want to thank is the producers group, who give healthy feedback to Pete and Jared on what they do wrong and how to improve the podcast even more. So a huge thanks goes out to John C. Bruss, Sean Michael Phillips, Dorsey Marshall, Michelle One Snyder, Scott Goldman, Britt Miracle, Trevor Barak, Esther Dentz. We couldn't do it without you. Now, back to the podcast.
So how did you then, I guess you passed through that, let's call it apologetic moment, and maybe help our listeners understand like how you did that.
I'll tell you how, Trayvon Martin. It was okay. Like, because again, my North Star, like my father was a Black Panther. So my understanding of faith and politics in social justice, like these aren't 3 points. This is one thing. Like even just hearing people say, well, it's a social justice gospel. I'm like, oh, okay. I don't understand how you separated the two. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like they can't be competing forces because they're one. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. I came from that already, that understanding. So I assumed that about the person, somebody else. But then it was just like, man, at the end of the day, dog, like, I can't help but being Black. Like, I don't care what your tradition is, like, what your theological tradition is. I came to Jesus Black. I'm standing at the cross Black. I got Black eyes. I don't know what to tell you, you know. So if a young Black man who, I mean, I saw Trayvon Martin, I saw me. I'm like, yeah, I have been in that moment. Like, no, I'm walking home. I'm minding my own business. I got headphones in. I got a hoodie on because it's cold, right? And you trying to tell me I shouldn't have crossed through your backyard. Okay, my bad. Sorry. I'll go to the street. Dang, chill. You know what I'm saying? And then I'm not allowed to have my hands in my pocket? Like, are you serious right now? Like, even if it's a bag of Skittles or it's not a bag of Skittles that was in my pocket, where's the law that said I can't have my hands in my pocket? You know what I'm saying? So, mm-hmm. and the cost of me responding in a way when someone was completely out of line and disrespectful to me is death. You know what I'm saying? That's the cost. You tell me somebody cut you off on the road and for you to defend yourself means it's okay for you to die. So I'm thinking my fellow brothers and sisters in Christ understand how preposterous that is. And even if I'm not making sort of a political statement, I'm just saying from a human perspective, yo, that's a tragedy. Little homie shouldn't have died. I feel like there's no both sides to the coin of this. George Zimmerman's wrong. 100% he's wrong. There's no, well, you got to look at what? You killed the boy.
So you talk about this as a way of changing your thinking. So were you getting pushback about that? Like, were there things that were happening?
Are you kidding me, bro? Like, yes.
Let me guess, from white people?
From white people.
Wow.
And all of a sudden, I was like, oh, wait a minute. Y'all are still racist. So then all of my understanding of being the son of a Black Panther and what I know about history, what I know about, and then all of it comes together. I was like, I thought, since y'all had y'all theology right and you fronting like you have your theology right, that somehow or another you was different Southerners. You know what I'm saying? And then it was like, no, your historical narrative came together. Your granddaddy owned slaves. And I'm like, oh, your understanding of theology didn't change you. You still racist. So then that thread, and then there was just, you know, just a cruel amount of just people just dying at the hands of policemen and just watching this ire and just people, and it just feeling like, I can't believe I have to explain this to you. Like, how is this? And it's like, yo, do you know any other Black people? Like, do you know any other people of color, period? Do you hear how callous you are? Like, this just, I don't care about your political stances right now. I'm just like, yo, just human to human. How you read the same Bible I read? Hell, how are you the same species that I am? You understand what I'm saying? And you're not drawing the same conclusion. Like, I just don't understand how your right to the Second Amendment somehow or another surpasses is more important than the death of a 14-year-old little boy. Like, how is that? I really like sushi. Really, really, really like sushi. But you were to tell me that me eating this sushi is going to cause some little kid to die. You know what, dude? Maybe we're just going to have to let go of sushi. It's all good. You know, I like sushi. Mm-hmm. But if you're telling me that, like, your child finna die because I ordered this plate of sushi. I don't want your kid to die, dude. I like sushi, but I just, you know, I don't think your kid should die over my preference of sushi. You know what? Let's get ramen. We'll just get ramen. It's all good. You know what I'm saying? I could let it go. I just couldn't understand. Like, and then it was just like this just unraveling of like, oh, you don't believe in the faith. You just want to be right. And then it was like, oh, and it's not even Christianity at all. Y'all just patriots. You think American is gospel. And I'm like, oh, okay, we don't believe the same thing. And then that was the beginning of just being like, realizing the other sort of like pieces, the baggage that came with what I thought was sort of good theology.
Well, it's more than just you don't believe the same thing. It's like you have a different God.
Yes. At the end of the day.
You know?
That's the way.
At the end of the day, you have a different God.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the way it felt.
I want to maybe tie this to your music. What was happening in your career at this time? Were there implications to that side of your world?
I wonder. I think that there was, since I came out the, like, so my sort of introduction to Christian industry popularity was a poem called Precious Puritans, where I just took a jab at them, you know, and just was like, well, you know, I don't understand why y'all like them so much. I mean, they was chaplains on slave ships. Like, why are you acting like these people had all of their work figured out? Like, how come nobody's connecting these dots, right? So that was my introduction, right? So I think I came out the gate swinging in their eyes that, like, okay, this guy's different. You know what I'm saying? And it was, so I think I gathered around me the fringe kind of people already, right? And then there was like the elements of sort of my career that was like, hey, this guy's edgy. Let's invite him into these things. And it was like, let's kind of sort of like use his edginess to kind of like almost validate that, hey, look, we're hip, we're cool, we're on the edge too, right? But it kept me like, I was never going to get booked on Winter Jam. Like, you ain't finna make the top of the top, but make us look cool. You understand what I'm
right,
saying?
Right. We want to use you for your edginess, but that we're not going to leverage that to your gain.
Yeah, but we're not listening to you.
Yeah. You don't have a voice. You just have a commodity for people to exploit.
Yes. So I think that sort of like, just out the box being that, like, it shut down. Whereas somebody different than like a Lecrae, who had this like full metamorphosis to where, you know, he was more like a darling, like they loved him. And then it was like, hey guys, newsflash, like I'm black too. You know what I'm saying? Like,
so when you say they, who are you talking about? You say they loved him.
I'm saying like from a systemic perspective, sort of like Christendom as an institution, and as an institution that has built an infrastructure of economy and commerce. You know what I'm saying? So like sort of the buyers, if you will, and then the gatekeepers of those buyers that would sort of like control kind of Western evangelicalism as a commodity. That's the they.
Yeah. And that I just kind of wanted to, because I, you know, I've have some other friends kind of in that the Christian music industry or in the Christian publishing industry where they kind of are those gatekeepers that have these code words, and it's not a robust understanding of what faith is about. It's just how many of these code words can you check off the box,
totally,
whether you're in or not.
Yeah, there's a reality of like, and I feel like for the well-thinking person, it should feel freeing to know that like we're just talking about another industry, and an industry has buyer's rules and commerce. There's only so much elasticity. You know what I'm saying? There's only so much that you can do that will serve your base of buyers. You know what I'm saying? And if you just kind of like give the buyers what they're looking for, then you're fine. You know what I'm saying? Don't conflate, which means that like, well, it's not our Christian walk. It's not our faith. It's, like you said, these signs that make this commercially viable, which would mean, like I said, it should give you a sigh of relief to know that like, if no one buys your book, doesn't mean you're not a faithful Christian. You know what I'm saying? Right.
Right.
And if a million people buy your book, that also doesn't mean you're a faithful Christian. It just means you work the market well. So it should be freeing. And for me, it was. You know, it's like, oh, okay, I just got to play by the rules. This doesn't mean that God has accepted me or not accepted me if I don't get on that stage.
Well, it's interesting to me because it feels like a narrowing of how we think about Christianity when we make it these code words, because I think of even just like the history of hip hop, and you mentioned like Tribe Called Quest and people that have these outward faith, Muslim faith, but a lot of hip hop had a gospel background. So they were using gospel tracks and all kinds of things. But that's not like, it's not quote unquote Christian because they do or don't use certain words or terminology. And it's like you can be it, almost like what I hear from you, Prop, is like you spoke the language, but you didn't have the grammar. You didn't know the rules.
That's good.
So you could speak it well. And like, that's the difference for me of like hip hop could often speak the language of Christianity really fluently, but they were dismissed because they didn't have the grammar rules. And that's like what made it Christian rap.
Dude, that's such a good way to put it. Good. That's some bars.
That's why I keep them around.
Bars. Yeah.
Lust auf besonders feine Weihnachten? Erlebe einzigartigen Genuss mit Rewe Feine Welt. Diese Woche zum Beispiel Rewe Feine Welt Schweizer Käse Trüffeltraum mildwürzig, je 150 Gramm Packung nur 3,49 Euro. Oder Rewe Feine Welt italienischer Prosciutto Crudo, roher Schinken mit Meersalz behandelt, mindestens 18 Monate gereift, je 100 Gramm Packung nur 4,29 Euro. Festlich sparen mit Genuss. Rewe, dein Markt.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Let me give you an example of what you just said. There's two of them. Kendrick Lamar and Chance the Rapper, right?
Yeah.
Because Kendrick, I just don't know how you can argue that Good Kid, Mad City was not just a testimony service of how he got saved. Like, that's what that album is.
Right.
But he was able to paint the black. He was able to paint the darkness well enough because he can cuss. You understand what I'm saying? So he's articulated our faith very well. You know, I think we don't know what it means to be a Christian rapper. Is it like what you're saying? Is it like, is it the faith of the person? Well, if it's the faith of the person, then you can't check Kendrick or Chance off. Like, that's their faith, right? Is it what they put out? Well, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, because based on what you just said, I can name you a ton of worship leaders that aren't Christians. Just because they making Christian music doesn't make them believers. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
So, and Chance just today went on Instagram Live and read through Galatians. Chance
right,
the Rapper.
Yeah. I saw he is like taking a sabbatical to go study.
I want to go study the word. So like, is it cool to be a Christian rapper now? Like, is he a Christian rapper? Well, no, he's Chance the Rapper. What do you mean, no, he's a Chance the Rapper? There's no way in the world I can get on Instagram Live and just do an exegetical study of Lamentations and someone still think that I'm cool.
Shot.
And I'm just saying, like, with the rules of, hell yeah, I'd do that. You know what I'm saying? But like, it just, these constructs, they're just, they're ridiculous. You know what I'm saying? Or they're, not that they're ridiculous, they're just, they're made up. They're just constructs, you know? And I think that's dope the way you said it, that like, you can speak the language, but you ain't got the grammar.
Right. Well, and I just see that as such a, it's such a great metaphor, I think, for a lot of the world that we live in, where these people feel, they're made to feel like they don't have, like I taught a class called For Skeptics Only when I was a pastor. And so I'd have all these people who come to me honestly thinking they weren't Christians anymore because their mom or husband or wife told them they weren't, and come to find out it's because they couldn't say these three words anymore. And that was all that it was. And so we've made it so mechanical.
Yeah.
And it's hurting a lot of people, I think, is my main point. And that's my main thing that I am kind of raging against, is we don't understand that when we do that, it's to prop us up, because we know if we just check the boxes, we're in. But that's excluding a lot of people.
Yeah, dude. And not only that, it's, I mean, that's just post-enlightenment empiricism. That's the notion that if you get the notions right, you know, and I'm like, well, that's not, I don't, this is not in our Bibles. Like, that's empiricism.
Faith is a formula.
Yeah, you know, did I say that right? Both of y'all intellectuals.
Yeah, I'm just sitting here taking it in. I mean, that's why I asked you before about your own upbringing, because in a way, I mean, nobody can escape the Enlightenment, really. But
no.
Like, your spiritual experience was not centered on Enlightenment thinking.
No.
And a lot of white people's experiences in church is, even though it's really bad and doesn't make sense, it's still intellectually oriented around a certain set of ideas, a system of thinking that gives you that sense of certainty that makes sure that you're in and other people are out.
Yeah.
It seems like you didn't have that. So that's
I didn't have that in the beginning, and then I put it on, and then I took it off. Yeah.
You took it off. Yeah. Well, we have a lot of people listening who are in the process of taking it off.
Yeah, dude.
And they're listening, and that's why I think this is really good for them to be hearing.
Yeah. So I want to look forward. What does that mean for you? What are your hopes for your faith and your music? Where do we go from here?
That's good, man. I think there's like so many rabbit holes that I'm speaking in total metaphor, but like you know, where you just peer over these like cliffs of where our Enlightenment thinking says, don't go over there. You know what I'm saying? Don't cross those tracks because it's dangerous. You know what I'm saying? I feel like, me personally, like if I really believe that my anchor is secure, then I'm going to run down that hole. Like, I'm fine. You know what I'm saying? May find some cool things down there, you know? So I think for me, it's a matter of reclaiming that voice, that strain, that narrative that I knew before I took it off. You know what I'm saying? And
it's a second naivete.
It's a second naivete. It's almost like I had to like...
Which is a beautiful thing.
Totally. I had to like retroactively ask my like deceased grandmother for forgiveness, you know?
Yeah.
For like dismissing her Christian experience, which I even knew then was one of the realest, you know, experiences I had seen to this day. You know what I'm saying? But because she couldn't tell you what superlapsarianism was, you know, she's not, her faith isn't genuine. You know what I'm saying? So first of all, it's a matter of that. It's a matter of like, again, for me, like bringing in and exploring sort of the African traditions, you know what I'm saying? That you know, church was 400 years before Europe stopped throwing Christians to lions, you know what I'm saying? So like, what were Christians doing for them 400 years? Well, they was in Nubia, they was in Ethiopia, they was Mongolia, for crying out loud, you know what I'm saying? So like, let me go back and find like, you know, parts of my sort of origins and narrative and cultural experiences that like, yo, these people look like, these people think like me, these people, you know, they come from my motherland. Like, let me learn a little bit of that. And then learning how to sort of amalgamate my intuitive, natural storytelling tone and ability and the way that I craft like words and bringing that back into sort of the music and the poetry that I make, you know what I'm saying? And what's crazy is like meeting dudes like you guys in a weird way is like proof that there's a buyer out there. There is people that want to hear the type of hip hop and faith that I'm walking in, you know what I'm saying? So you're not out here by yourself. You're not just like making weird music for your garage, you know, like, nah, there's people don't want to hear this, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, and when you talk about the rabbit hole, I like to talk about kind of faith as a wall or faith as a tether, mm-hmm. kind of moving from the wall to the tether, where like one kind keeps you from exploring. Mm-hmm. It's like based on fear. And then the tether point is actually when you're more secure and it actually invites you to explore because you know you have that tether point.
Yeah, dude. That's another thing you just did where you just said what I was trying to say, but just way more articulate than me. Which one of us is the poet, dude? Like, yeah, duh.
But I think that probably really matters to you.
Does.
I could sense that as a sense of freedom as an artist now to go be creative and to be and explore and not have
dude.
That be opposed to your faith, but being fueled by it.
Oh my gosh. Like, think about like if you're trying to make a movie, but your bad guy can't cuss. Like, your bad guy's like, shoot, darn, we're going to stab
my
you.
Word.
My word.
Stop like, that now.
I'm not going to believe this bad guy is that bad. Like, he's kind of funny, you know? So it's like, I can't tell a story if you don't let me paint the black. You know what I'm saying? Like, so it's very freeing, like you said, as a tether to be like, nah, like, I can paint the black. Like, let me tell this story the way that this story needs to be told if I'm going to get you into the moment. I mean, the moment's got to be kind of dark. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, listen, Prop, we are coming, unfortunately, to the end of our time here, which we lament greatly.
Womp, womp, womp.
But listen, for the seven people out there who don't know who you really are, where can they find you? Like, on online? And are you working on any particular projects at the moment?
Boy, am I, man. I Ooh. Am working on a ton of things. I'm writing a book. I'm working on a new album. We're recording the third season of our podcast, Red Couch. And all of this stuff is going to start rolling out January 1. I don't know when this is going to be released, but it's going to be rolling out January 1. This might be a retroactive you figuring out we've been rolling this stuff out, which is the beauty of recording. Anyway, so my website is just prophiphop.com. That's prophiphop.com. All of my social media is also the same, just prophiphop, and prophiphop. And the podcast is the Red Couch Pod. We do social and we call it brown-eyed social and political commentary with a hood twist. So we just take your hot takes from your news sources and we're going to kind of make them understandable for normal people, almost like Ooh. What y'all do for the Bible. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so keep up with that. We're going to take that on tour. Touring this February and March with The Brilliance and Gunger. So those tickets are available also on my website. Please come see us. It'll be this live, only with music. and radness. And
is that going to be like all over the place?
It's all over the place, dude.
Really?
It's like totally Philly? All over. Yes, like Philly.
Are you serious?
All right. Well, you guys send us the date.
We got to get us in for free.
You can. I can let you in for free.
This is recorded. We're going to hold it.
Let me finish. As long as you buy merch.
Yes. Oh, yes. Are you kidding me?
Of course.
Hey, tell us a little bit about the book. Like, do you have a title yet? Or what?
I do have a book. I do have a title.
Okay.
No one knows this, so this is rad. The title's called Terraforming, Making Livable Worlds. And it's just, you know, when we land on Mars, Mars is not an inhabitable planet. We have to do things to it to make it inhabitable. And what you do to a planet to make it livable is terraforming. And I'm just, what if we did that here with our culture and with each other? What if we started thinking about what do we need to do to make our world much more livable with each other?
Hmm. Well, that's excellent.
That's a very Christian topic.
Oh, yes.
Right. Yeah. Awesome.
Wait till you hear the content.
Yeah, I can't wait.
When I use the words that you could sell.
Yeah, right. Excellent. Well, hey, thank you so much for coming on. It was excellent.
Yeah, dude. Thank you, guys.
Right, Prop. We'll do it again. Thanks.
All right, dudes.
Well, folks, Prop mentioned a song, and we want to send you off with that. But before we do, very quickly, Jared.
Yeah, we have some exciting things here as we launch the third season. We've been dreaming about a lot of things and how we can keep building this community. We would love your support to help do these things. So if you have found value in what we do, head to patreon.com/thebibleforNormalPeople for ways you can support our work. See you next time.
Here's Prop.
Gonna deal with some in-house issues here. Hey, pastor, you know it's hard for me when you quote Puritans. Oh, the precious Puritans. Have you not noticed our facial expressions? One of bewilderment and heartbreak, like not you too, pastor. You know they were chaplains on slave ships, right? Would you quote Columbus to Cherokees? Would you quote Cortez to Aztecs, even if their theology was good? It just sings of blind privilege, wouldn't you agree? Your precious Puritans. They looked my onyx and bronze skin forefathers in their face. Their polytheistic, God-hating face. Their shackled, diseased, imprisoned face. And taught a gospel that said that God had multiple images in mind when he created us in it. Therefore, destined salvation contains a contentment in the stage for which they were given, which is to be owned by your forefathers' superior image-bearing face, says your precious Puritans. And my anger towards this teaching screams of an immature doctrine and a misunderstanding of the gospel. I should be content in this stage, right? Isn't that what Paul taught? According to your precious Puritans. Oh, you get it, but you don't get it. Oh, that we can go back to an America that once were founded on Christian values. They don't build preachers like they used to. Oh, the richness of their revelation. It must be nice to not have to consider race. It must be nice to have time to contemplate the stars. Pastor, your colorless rhetoric is a cop-out. You see my skin, and I see yours. And they are beautiful, fearfully and wonderfully, divinely designed uniqueness. Shouldn't we celebrate that rather than act like it ain't there? I get it. Your Puritans got it. But how come the things the Holy Spirit showed them in a valley of vision didn't compel them to knock on their neighbor's door and say, you can't own people? Your precious Puritans were not perfect. You romanticized them as if they were inerrant, as if the skeletons in their closet was pardoned due to their hard work and tobacco growth, as if abolitionists were not racist and just pro-union, as if God only spoke to white boys with epic beards. You know, Jesus didn't really look like them paintings. I was just Michelangelo's boyfriend. Your precious Puritans. Oh, they got it, but they don't get it. It's not one generation of believers that has figured out the marriage between proper doctrine and action. Don't pedestal these people. Your precious Puritans, partners, purchased people. Why would you quote them? Step away. Think of the congregation that quotes you. Are you inerrant? Trust me, I know the feeling. Same feeling I get when people quote me, like if they only knew. See, I get it, but I don't get it. Ask my wife.
And it bothers me when you quote Puritans, if I'm honest. For the same reason it bothers me when people quote me, they precious propaganda. So I guess it's true that God really does use crooked sticks to make straight lines, just like your precious Puritans.